Hello, I'm Anita Arnand, and thank you for downloading BBC Radio 4's Any Answers, the sister programme to Any Questions. Good afternoon, welcome to Any Answers. So this has been the coldest start to March on record. They were calling it the Beast from the East, Storm Emma, whatever you want to call it. The aftermath is still being felt in many parts of the country. We heard in the news bulletin 1,400 homes still without power. More snow expected in Scotland. More snow expected in the Peaks and the Pennines. Freezing rain in the northeast. The question to you is, how does the country cope in severe weather? What have you made of the way in which the country has coped and the way in which the media has covered the story? 03700 100 444 is the number to call. Also, Theresa May has said this week that nobody's going to get what they want when it comes to Brexit. And also she was talking about the hard border in Ireland, saying that she believed it wouldn't happen. Well, what do you believe at the moment? There are many mixed messages coming at us this week. If there is a hard border, does it go hand in hand that peace ends in Northern Ireland? What do you think about that? It was said by one of the panellists that that is a patronising attitude to take, an attitude that's taken outside of Ireland, not in it. Love your thoughts on that. Love your thoughts on anything to do with the Prime Minister's latest speech on Brexit. Also, over 1,000 people, common people like you, like me, are going to be perhaps invited to Meghan Markle and Prince Harry's wedding. Is this a good idea, do you think, or is it too populist? And if you got an invitation, would you go? Donald Trump, he's been talking about swinging tariffs on foreign steel and aluminium. He says trade wars can be good. Can they? And is it time to renationalise our railways and our utilities? Your thoughts on any of those subjects, 03700 100 444. You can text us on 84844 or tweet us using the hashtag BBCAQ. Let us start with the weather, though, because I know some of you are still in the throes of some pretty bad conditions and some of you have seen some horrendous conditions this week. Sarah North is calling us from Glastonbury in Somerset. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Good afternoon.
Hi there, and you were pretty badly pounded, I take it?
Yeah, we were, but I mean, the weather forecast was absolutely spot on. It said it would snow at 3 o'clock, and at 2:55 it started snowing. Mm. So, and people should have heeded the warnings, like, don't travel. There was an interview with a gentleman who was complaining because he was stuck on the 303, but he'd left London at 6 o'clock in the evening. By 6 o'clock in the evening down here, none of our roads weren't passable.
Do you think we cope well as a nation? I mean, those are individual responsibilities that you're talking about. On the panel for Any Questions, there seemed to be a consensus that, you know, yes, these are extreme conditions and there isn't anything that we have to do systemically to prepare for things like this. Some said actually it was, and I'm using the phrase they didn't use, but like a snowstorm in a teacup, that everyone was making a bit of a fuss about nothing. What did you think?
I think the weather in Somerset was unprecedented. I mean, the amount of snow that came down and so quickly was just unbelievable. And I think, you know, I think as a nation we've coped incredibly well. Mm. And I think, you know, we live in little villages in Somerset and everyone mucks in and helps everybody. So yeah, I do think it brings out the best in people. And I don't know how you plan for, without wasting a lot of money, trying to plan for unprecedented weather events that come once every 25, 30 years.
Mm. Sarah, thank you very much indeed. There's lots coming through on the texts and tweets. The bad weather needed reporting, says Tarquin. It did go over the top at times. We didn't need special TV programmes. The news was adequate, but it was really important news. People died. Another one here from Ray. So Fraser, and I think that's Fraser Nelson, who was on Any Questions, thinks having thousands of people stuck in cars overnight is coping, does he? I'm afraid it's another case of government cutting spending. When something odd happens in this country, the country gets stuck. Businesses lose out. Another one here on Twitter. Perhaps if our transport infrastructure did cope with normal conditions, it might be better able to cope with the more extreme ones. It says here, invest in our rail. And another one here, it's okay that it snowed. It's okay the media reported it, that it snowed. It's okay that some people and organisations changed their plans in response to the snow. Let's just all relax, shall we, a little bit. Let's talk to Harriet Cockle, who's calling us from Fakenham in Norfolk. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, Harriet. So, I mean, what's it like where you are right now?
I'm looking out at snow. We had cleared quite a lot of snow yesterday and then we've got lots more overnight. So we're kind of back to where we started from.
Right. Do you know, I'm sort of roughly in inches, what we're talking about?
as I look out of my house, I'm probably looking at 6 inches of lying snow, but that doesn't take into account what's drifted across a lot of roads and fields.
Yeah. Now, there was this attitude expressed on the programme, which I'm seeing a lot of anger directed towards it on Twitter today, saying, look, actually, it wasn't such a big deal. Everyone got a little bit hysterical about nothing and everybody coped just fine. And people getting angry, saying that's a very London-centric view of things.
I think it's a completely London-centric view. Londoners probably want to walk into their shops. They want to buy meat, vegetables, bread, milk, but they probably don't give any thought about how those things are going to reach the shelves, come hell, high water or snow.
Are you from farming folk?
Yes, basically. I can't speak for the very unfortunate people who've had to tip away hundreds of thousands of litres of milk because the milk lorry can't get through, which is miserable enough. I can speak with a little bit of authority about pig rearing and trying to get pigs either off to be slaughtered or not to be able to give them water because all the pipes are frozen for days on end. I can also speak with some authority about the harvesting of vegetables in, say, Lincolnshire, because people still want to go to their local supermarket. They don't want to find empty shelves. But I would suggest that the person who asked the question last night might like to spend a little time, perhaps in the fields of Lincolnshire, pulling leeks in the most horrendous conditions that find their way to the supermarket shelves, hopefully by the next day or the day after.
Just the question that you're reacting to, I'll just remind people if they didn't listen to the programme that preceded ours. The question was phrased thus, has the media panicked over the cold weather this week and has common sense gone out of the window?
No, well, I would say that the media has not panicked and nor have the weather forecasters, because people in rural areas tend to live from forecast to forecast to forecast to try and cope. I'm not just talking about farming people, although obviously nobody would get on very well if there were nothing to eat. That also does apply to the public services. And if it isn't hammered home to people, and like your last caller said, why do you set out on a journey that any sense would tell you was not going to end happily? But so it does take the media drumming it into people who don't seem to have any sense. But to even ask the question, I think, just shows a complete lack of understanding.
Can I ask you this? Because you have an understanding that people in the cities will not have. The snow will melt. And now there is fear for flooding. I don't know whether that applies to your area or not, but is that something that you and your neighbours are worried about?
Well, there will be an awful lot of water around, and that is an added difficulty in itself. Yes, it is an added difficulty. If you live by the coast, obviously you might get overwhelmed from the sea. Mm. If you live inland, then the snow's got to go somewhere.
Listen, thank you very much for your call, Harriet. And if any of you do want to talk about what's going on in your areas, very, very keen to hear it. Also, if you have suggestions about, is there anything that systemically should be done? Is there a way of a nation preparing for extraordinary cases such as these? This is from Dawn, who says, could any answers please say three cheers to the volunteers of the mountain rescue teams who have helped drivers day and night in the snow of the north of England? Yes, three cheers for you. Absolutely. It's the sterling work of individuals that really comes to the fore at times like this. Sarah has written saying, as an A&E doctor on the south coast where conditions have been nowhere near as bad as elsewhere, I sympathise with colleagues in harder hit areas. However, I would point out that emergency service workers are just people too, with families of their own to look after and prioritise. If the infrastructure does not facilitate their provision of a vital service clearing road system, providing emergency hospital accommodation, covering extra childcare costs and helping to travel to work, why should they put their own safety and well-being at risk? We all appreciate we're doing an important job. We all go the extra mile every day, but we're not martyrs and we would rather work in a system that facilitates our work. and rather than relies on goodwill. Another one here. Though my main thanks go out to those in the emergency services and hospitals over the last few days, I do hope the public will also thank the farmers who voluntarily cleared the roads or pulled out cars stuck in the snow by buying British produce. You know, I'm very happy to come back to the weather if you wish, but let's a lot of calls on this issue of the hard border. Or what kind of border, porous border, what kind of border will it be? Post-Brexit border with Ireland. Henry Gordon, John Berkeley, Brendan Gallagher, all very patiently waiting. Let's go first of all, though, to you, John Berkeley, calling us from Taunton in Somerset. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Anita.
Hi there. So what did you make of the debate that you heard on the programme?
Well, I read it, I listened to it in conjunction with the press statement issued by Monsieur Barnier on the potential Brexit agreement. And the point I wanted to make is the language used in that press statement reveals the cynical side of the EU, that they will go to any lengths and they will risk any potential consequence and will sacrifice on the altar of their European project anything to hold this together.
Well, what if they turned round, Michel Barnier and Michel Barnier's office, and said, right back at you. Right back at you, John. It's the risk is being taken by the British government and the British people.
Well, that's fine, but if you recall Lord Trimble's thoughts on the legal position, actually, the legal onus is on the EU to maintain their borders. And right now, the game seems to be that the EU is saying, well, put a proposal to us. Tell us what you are going to do. There's no element here of cooperation or some sort of joint exploration of how this can be done. They ignore the fact that technology can be used. I think you had someone on your programme a few weeks ago who was an ex-senior customs officer who said that technology can be used to make not to have a hard border. And they wish to ignore this because they have to maintain this idea of ever closer union.
Did you by any chance hear George Mitchell, Senator George Mitchell?
Quite a bit of it.
Yeah. So for those who didn't, he was on the Today programme, and I've heard him speaking elsewhere. As you know, one of the architects of the Good Friday Agreement. Now he was saying, look, everybody at the moment is talking about trade, and certainly you've just alluded to trade, and I'm glad you're a regular listener. You're absolutely right. We did have an expert on customs who said there are workarounds, there are technological workarounds to this. But Mitchell was saying there is something more than trade at stake here.
Yeah.
There are hearts and minds at stake. He said, look, the thing that really changed was when you had no border, people travelled in between through into each other's communities, and they could no longer stereotype each other as the other, the enemy, and you would lose that.
Yeah.
Do you take on board what he says?
Well, if you can achieve not a hard border situation with technology as a solution, then you still maintain the status quo. So the problem goes away.
Okay.
By the way, could I just say that I'd recommend readers and listeners to read the book by Yanis Varoufakis on his dealings with the EU, and it will show you in full technicolour how cynical they can be.
Yanis will be ever so grateful for the plug. Not that he needs those, but thank you very much indeed. 03700 100 444 is the number to call. Let us speak to Brendan Gallagher, who's calling us. Where from, Brendan? Where are you calling us from? Dublin?
From Dublin, Ireland, yeah.
Right, OK. So Brendan O'Neill had a point which I love your take on. He said it is utterly patronising, and it's all people from outside Ireland who are saying, oh, it's going to jeopardise the peace process. It is talking down to the Irish people. Do you feel talked down to when people say that kind of thing?
No, I don't. And first of all, let's say that most Irish people love the new relationship with the UK. And it started, as we know, with Queen Elizabeth coming to Ireland 8 years ago. And she swung public opinion right behind her. And certainly in the last 20 years, the people of Ireland and Britain have had very, very close ties. And no one in Ireland wants to break off this really strong relationship with the United Kingdom. I was reading just this morning, and I was just looking up to Google to say that there are already 277,000 British people born in Britain now living in Ireland, a huge number. Mm. And there's 375,000 Irish born in Ireland who are living in Britain. So there's a huge amount of trade and conversation and we're linked by family, we're linked by... But at the same time, what we have to understand is that the Northern Ireland border, it has an iconic status in the history of Ireland, particularly in the 20th century, when the nationalists of Northern Ireland were cut off from the rest of the island of Ireland in the early 1920s. And their religion, their culture, everything was subsumed, and they lived as second-class citizens. This was the experience of Catholic, Irish, Gaelic living in Northern Ireland. And we saw the outcome of that was the marches in 1968, started off by John Hume, the greatest living Irishman.
I don't want to go too much into it, but as the other Brendan was told off in the other programme, let's not go too much into the history of things, into the future of things as you see it. I mean, you've given us a good thumbnail sketch of how you see the past has been. But the future, we had another caller just before you saying, look, if we have this technological workaround to what will be called a hard border, but will be really be no different to what we have now, people will still come across. The psychological mix of people will still take place. We've gone beyond those dark days and we are now on the road to peace that you cannot U-turn on. What would you say?
Well, listen, I read today that I think that in the UK, I think of these two boroughs in London, just to control that system that Boris Johnson was talking about, there's 646 cameras mounted on 203 gantries around the two boroughs. And if we had to put those 600 or 800 or 900 cameras along the border of Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, they'd be shot out of the sky.
Right.
And that's the problem. What we don't want to do in Ireland, we don't want to facilitate any return to the violence of the past. Nobody, very few people are apologists for the Republican movement or for the IRA. We don't want to see any return to violence. But anything that stimulates or triggers something, that in the end, we'll end up back where we started.
Could you just wait? I'm not going to get rid of you, Brendan. Can I just keep you on? But just I want to introduce somebody else into the conversation. You may end up speaking to each other. Henry Gordon is calling us from Bangor in Northern Ireland. Henry, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Brendan Henry. I don't know whether you heard much of what Brendan was saying, but he said, look, any risk to the peace, anything that might agitate what we have today is a risk not worth taking. How do you react to that?
I don't think that it will have any effect at all. I think the two things are separate. The trade and so on doesn't have all that big. It's not going to spark a resumption, I think, of the violence. And by the way, the violence, unfortunately, is continuing in a very, very minor key, obviously. But people are still, prison officers and so on, being killed. Not that frequently, obviously. But it's still going on. Now, I don't know whether Brexit coming in and a hard border coming in would make that violence get any worse. But I don't honestly think so.
Okay, Brendan Henry, you're worrying for little reason. It'll be fine.
Yeah, well, listen, we can't predict the future, but what we do need to do is to learn a bit from the past and the mistakes that were made between the two islands. We have to work together very, very closely. It's very true. And I think Theresa May yesterday, I think her conversation with the ambassadors in London was a very fine one. I think the reaction here in Ireland among the press are saying at least that it was an honest attempt on her part to address the issue. Some are saying that it was a heartfelt plea on her part to the people of Ireland to see how together we can sort out the problem. And I think we can. I mean, the relationship that we have now is far, far superior to the one that we had 50 years ago.
Okay, so, I mean, so Brendan, you've moved really to Henry's position. And Henry, I mean, in Northern Ireland, may I ask, and you feel free to say you don't want to tell me, but did you vote leave or remain when it came to the vote?
I voted leave,
There was some criticism of the rhetoric, the heat of rhetoric. I can't remember whether it was Brendan. I think it was Brendan O'Neill who was talking about Leo Varadkar, the way Leo Varadkar was talking the language that he used and talking about the pressures that he was feeling himself, the threat posed by Sinn Féin to certain seats and his electoral power. I think he was making reference to those. How have you found the rhetoric in the last few weeks? Ratcheting up or the same as it ever was?
It seems to be ratcheting up, yes. Well, that's inevitable, obviously, with people taking sides and the arguments getting more fierce. But I don't think it will... I can understand Mr. Varadkar's fear of Sinn Féin and so on, and but Sinn Féin, oddly enough, have been very quiet over this Brexit matter and so on. But I don't honestly think that there's that great a link between what goes on in trade matters and so on, tariffs and the political situation.
Okay.
Because in a sense, it's already the executive has already broken down, between Sinn Féin and the DUP, and it broke down more than a year ago, well before these Brexit arguments reached their height. So there's not that much of a connection.
A connection, okay. Take your point. Henry Gordon, thank you very much. Brendan Gallagher, thank you very much indeed. Just to remind everybody, just if you want to call in on any of these points that have been made, you are more than welcome. 03700 100 444 is the number to call. Northern Ireland, just to also remind you, in case you find this helpful, voted to remain. 56% was the figure. Let's take another call on this. Before we come to you, Sanjoy Sen, Mike Kane, waiting very patiently on the line, we will read a few of your tweets and texts. There is going to be a hard border. We will build a wall 10 feet high, and what's more, we shall make the Irish pay for it. It sounds sarcastic. The sarcasm is intended, says Maximilian. Another one here from Matthew Rees. Nowhere on the planet are there soft borders that the government thinks they can implement in Ireland. It's a fantasy. Stephanie says, if this nation is truly a united kingdom, Article 50 should never have been triggered before the implications for the Northern Ireland border and the Good Friday Agreement had been properly considered. Julie says, no economist or trade negotiator worth their salt takes technology as our saviour seriously as an answer to the border issue. Let's take another call on this. Sanjoy Sen. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi there, Anita.
Hi.
I was actually in the audience last night, my very first visit to Any Questions, as I work in central London. And I have to say, it was actually one of the best shows that's been on for a long time.
I'm sure that was because you were there, Sanjoy.
inevitably so. But okay. aside from that, what really made the difference is we had some panelists with some real sort of views for once, that there wasn't much sort of fence sitting and nobody's going to get to hear what they want from everybody, but that's what made it for a good show. And actually listening back to it, it sounds a lot tougher on the radio than it actually was on
Right, well, listen, grateful for your critical appraisal. What did you want to say issues that were discussed?
And here's my point.
Yeah.
UK doesn't want a hard border. The Republic of Ireland doesn't want a hard border. Remainers don't, and neither do Leavers. So we're in a situation where absolutely nobody is asking for a hard border, with the exception of the European Union threatening the UK and Ireland with it. Now, speaking of somebody who voted Leave, I was one of the minority in the audience last night. One of the things that kind of horrifies me as somebody who's lived and worked in Europe is just the hardline stance that the European Union has taken with all of this. And not only is it hardline, it's also wholly unenforceable. When you have two countries who have no intention of having a hard border, having one imposed on them by the European Union. Mm. And this, for me, more than anything else, kind of justifies why Leave wasn't so much something that was desirable, but was almost inevitable, I'm sorry to say.
Can I just bring somebody else in here? Mike Kane, meet Sanjoy Sen. Mike calling from Stockport. Sanjoy is saying, actually, it's not us, it's them. It's Europe that's making this whole hard border thing an issue. It's nothing to do with us. What do you say to him?
I think your email a short while ago said it all. It should have all been thought out about before we triggered Article 50.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, we're talking about trade and we're talking about humans. We're talking about a border control and not a border control. I come from the Remain, I would like a United Ireland situation. So I would quite like to have no frontier on the island of Ireland at all. I can't see that one of the reasons that we're leaving the European Union is to control our borders. We can't avoid having a border down the Irish Sea. We've got one along the English Channel, and presumably we've got one up the North Sea. So why can't we have one up the Irish Sea?
On the issue that Sanjoy, though, specifically is raising, that, look, it's Europe. This is all Europe's gameplay here. If Europe decided to just loosen the strings a bit, everything would be fine.
No, it's not true, that, is it? It's logical, really.
Who's going to impose it?
Yeah, but it's logic, isn't it? If you're going to have a border, you have a border. If you're not going to have a border, you have a free-for-all.
Sanjoy, I mean, there is a point there, isn't there? I mean, a border is either a border or not a border, isn't it?
Well, it's funny that neither of us want a border, but for completely different reasons.
Mm.
What I would say is that, no, there isn't hard and fast in terms of saying you've got to either have the current situation, or you've got to go back to the old days, which nobody wants, of army checkpoints and such like. Now, there are sort of technological ways of doing it.
There are so many issues here. OK, they're not over each other. Oh, Mike, just let Sandra speak, and I'll bring you in.
Right, OK.
The one point I would make is that if anybody's going to give anybody lessons on how to manage borders, presumably it shouldn't be the European Union, given the crisis that they've presided over and created in the Mediterranean on their eastern borders. Absolutely the last people we should be taking lectures from are people who create border crises of their own with no problems whatsoever.
Let Mike come in. Mike, very briefly, and then we've got over to the other calls.
I don't think we're talking about army control anyway between Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland. And I think it's up to the British government to decide the British view of having things rather than the European way of having things. I prefer that we stayed in the European Union, and I prefer that we had a united Ireland.
Okay.
We haven't got that.
OK, no, we have. Mike, thank you very much indeed. 03700 100 444 is the number to call. An email here from Brian Dalton, who says, among other things, it's a rather long email, I'll just read you a bit of it here. In my opinion, people were lied to, told leaving the EU was easy, given false promises about funding the NHS, all the more reason to allow for a second referendum, says Brian, when people actually know the facts and can make a reasoned decision. Let's take another call on this. Who to go to? Let's go to Henry Marston, who's been very patiently waiting, calling from Rotherham. Hello. Henry, are you there?
Yep.
Hi, Henry. What did you want to say?
It's to do with Donald Trump, and as I see it...
I'll come back to you, Henry. It's me jumping around in my brain. Let's go to somebody else who wants to talk about the border, and then we'll see if we can squeeze Donald Trump in at the end. Let's go to Robert Little, who's calling us from outside Belfast. Hi, Robert. Is Robert there? OK, Larry Page, are you there?
Yes.
Hooray!
I am here.
Oh, my goodness. Am I glad to hear you, Larry? Yeah, what did you want to say? You're calling from right next to the Channel Tunnel, am I right?
I am, right, yeah. And I don't see why we need a border at all in this day and age. I mean, if we import stuff from Ireland, say, or France or whatever, the Irish taxman knows exactly what that company is producing. If they're producing cheese or Kerrygold butter, they know how many million tons of milk they're getting in. They know how many packages they're buying to ship their butter in. And if Tesco's or Sainsbury's are selling it in the UK, well, the taxman over here is going to know what Tesco's and Sainsbury's are selling. Now, this doesn't just apply to butter and cheese, of course. I mean, it's car parts. Mm. I mean, why would you not know what's being shipped?
Okay.
Why do you need to keep checking trucks? It's crazy. It could be operated like a VAT system where the tax is added, the tax has been deducted, the tax is added, and as value is added to the goods
Got
as they
it.
Pass through the country,
yeah.
they get reclaimed at the end.
At the tax point. Thank you very much, Larry. Thank you very much, Indina. Thank you all of the others on my checkerboard of... where's like sort of Russian roulette on this screen at the moment. Hopefully we'll be able to talk to Henry Marston in a moment, who wanted to call about tariffs. But just very quickly, an email here from Richard, who says, William Rees-Mogg has been warning of Brino, Brexit in name only. What Theresa May has announced is Bribo, Brexit in bureaucracy only. We leave the EU, then stitch together an incredibly complex lattice of arrangements that overlay the existing structures of the EU at huge cost, with gaping holes in crucial areas of our economy. And it's a long email, but thought I'd read you a bit. Henry Marston, where have you been? Hi, Henry from Rotherham. Hi, sorry, I leapt to Trump before I'd finished with the border, but you wanted to talk about this whole sometimes a trade war can be a good thing announcement from Donald Trump. Is he right?
Well, I think he's barking up the wrong tree, in that every time we see him in his election campaign, he was in front of the Rust Belt steel plants that are obsolete and out of date. He's and we see that on the television when there's a news item. Those aren't the sort of steel plants that are modern today. You can't resuscitate them. You need new plants with new technology, which the Chinese have built with Western support. Those are the plants that make steel cheaply, fast, and economically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. He's trying to put on tariffs to
please that Rust Belt vote bank, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, OK, Henry. Yeah, no, go. Get the point that you're making. Thank you very much indeed. A few seconds to the end of the programme, a couple of texts. If Trump made China a rogue state and enforced trade sanctions, would we obey our special relationship powers and lose out on all that going global trade we're supposed to be looking forward to with the likes of China? That's it. Oh, I thought I had more time. Same time again next week. Till then, goodbye. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Any Answers. Don't forget, if you want to hear any questions or you'd like to invite the programme to your venue, then please go to the BBC Radio 4 website and search for Any Questions. I'm Anita Arnand. Thank you for listening.